Big moments or small moments, they all deserve great style. At Maurice's, we're here to help you show up feeling your best, no matter what's on your calendar. Whether it's a date night, a special event, or just another Tuesday, our over 800 stylists are here to help. From tried and true denim to head-turning looks, we've got style that fits your life and your budget. Visit your local Maurice's to find fashion fit for you with a little help from us.
Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anabay, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anabay sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the Rust shooting trial against Alec Baldwin from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now back to the courtroom.
Bathroom, whatever, you need to be patient. We're trying to move the trial along, okay? All right, this probably isn't the most appropriate time, but media in the war room, or whatever we call it, one more cup, and everybody is not allowed to bring any liquids of any kind whatsoever. My staff is, and our county people are not going to be picking up trash that you all could pick up, okay? And that also means downstairs in the jury assembly room. So one more cup, one more water. But let's just have some manners on picking up after ourselves, okay? All right, sorry I had to bring that up right now. Yes, she's still under oath. Is that okay, or do you want me to?
That's fine. Right. May I proceed?
Yeah.
Good morning, Investigator Pop.
Good morning.
Why don't we look at these now? Keep in front.
Good morning again. So we saw a lot of pictures yesterday and heard about some search warrants that were conducted that you were present for. And I'd like to sort of divide what we do this morning into sort of two categories, the firearm and the ammunition. Does that make sense? Okay, as to the firearm, I think where you left off yesterday is ultimately that firearm was destroyed in the testing. Fair?
Not destroyed, but broken.
Yeah, you know, the word broken, you know, that I think I heard you use yesterday, it's fair to say that the firearm can't be put back in the original condition that it was in at the time of the incident. Is that fair?
I believe it could be put back together with replaced parts, but as far as, in my terms, destroyed meaning no longer in existence, it is not the case.
Right. No, of course. The gun and its broken parts still exist, right?
Yes.
But as being part of the investigation and entrusted with the evidence in this case, the gun will never be in exactly the same condition that it was in on October 21st. Fair? Yeah. Then I want to talk to you now about the ammunition piece of this. And the investigation into the source of the lethal bullet in this case led you to executing a search warrant at Seth Kenny's prop house, right?
Yes.
And you knew that he had provided star line brass silver ammunition to the set, correct?
Yes.
What you were investigating at that time was whether it was star line brass silver and only dummies, or if it was star line brass silver and he also had live ammunition in his prop house, correct?
Yes.
And you did know that Seth Kenny kept live ammunition at his prop house, correct?
I believe at that time we were looking for live ammunition, yes.
Right, but you were aware of whether you found the exact correct live ammunition that matched perfectly the live ammunition on the movie set. You did ultimately recover some live ammunition, and you had probable cause to get a search warrant, right?
Yes.
And did that concern you that in a prop house that's sending out ammunition for movie sets, that there was both live ammunition and dummy round?
Yes.
So I want to take a step back for a second. When you go out to collect evidence on a day like October 21st, 2021, you bring with you your Nikon camera, right?
Yes.
You have gloves with you, right?
Yes.
And in a perfect world, you're trying to get to the evidence and the state of the evidence as quickly as possible. Fair?
Yes.
And so you did respond to this scene, and the first item that you collected that ended up broken was the prop gun, right?
Yes.
And when you got there, you knew that someone had touched it without gloves on, right?
Yes.
You knew that when somebody collected it, they didn't take a photo, right?
Yes.
But you did take that into evidence, and that was sort of the first item in this case that you were collecting and entrusted to keep vouchered and maintained for the course of this investigation. Is that fair?
Yes.
And it was a critical piece of evidence. Isn't that true?
Yes.
And so as you continue after that moment into the scene, you're looking for additional evidence. Fair?
Yes.
And physical evidence is critical evidence in an investigation, right?
Yes.
Because, you know, witnesses and their memories can change. Witnesses can say one thing one day and another day, but physical evidence pretty much stays the same, right?
I'm just objecting to a compound question.
Physical evidence stays the same, right?
Yes.
And you logged all the evidence you collected in this case?
Yes.
And all the evidence collected by law enforcement in this case was ultimately logged by you?
Yes.
And by logging it, you also make it available for the defense so that we have visibility into what in fact you collect.
Yes.
And one way you figure out as you're going through a scene what evidence is relevant is you can talk to your fellow officers, right?
Yes.
You can talk to witnesses, right?
I do not. As part of I'm not an investigator, I'm a technician. So my concern is with the physical evidence. I don't do any of the interviews.
No, I know you don't do formal interviews, but, you know, in this case, you did talk to Seth Kenny, right? You're not forbidden to speak to somebody who's at a scene.
No, I do believe we had some casual conversations. Yeah.
Well, but there are times where a witness could say in your presence, hey, that glove is very important, and they would say it to you and Corporal Hancock, and you would
I object to the hypothetical.
Overruled.
As I was saying, you went to Corporal Hancock, could be at a scene, and somebody could say, hey, that glove was used, and you, as a technician, would say, okay, that witness is pointing out that glove, that could be important, I'm going to note that, and once I confer with Corporal Hancock, potentially take that into custody, take an inventory.
Yes, that's something that could happen, yes.
And the other thing that you do is, and you talked about this a little bit on your direct, which is you can learn information and decide what to forensically test, fair?
Yes.
So in this case, for example, Mr. Baldwin's clothes had red on them and you tested it for blood, right?
Yes.
And it turned out it was movie set blood, right?
Yes.
Meaning it wasn't actually blood.
Correct. Okay.
So as you continue through the scene, you get to the prop cart, and you find the shell casing. And I thought this was on a moment ago.
All right, come on.
And this is that one.
It was up there that you had a...
And I'm putting State's Exhibit 29. Thank you very much, you both. Mm-hmm. And I'm showing you Exhibit 29, and I'll, in a moment I'll show you Exhibit 28. And this is the shell casing that you recovered in this case that housed the lethal projectile. Correct?
Yes.
And so, and in fact, you were able to then recover the actual bullet piece of the ammunition because you learned from Mr. Baldwin that it was at the hospital with Mr. Souza, right?
Yes.
And so you were then able to go to the hospital and we heard from that officer and collect the other piece of the ammunition, correct?
Yes.
And that's an example, right, of learning something from a witness and making a decision based on it, right?
Yes.
Okay. And as to the prop gun, because you learned from Mr. Baldwin that he just manipulated the hammer, you didn't test the trigger of the firearm, correct?
I'm sorry, you're asking if I myself tested the
trigger? Yeah.
I'm not qualified to do that, so it was not completed by myself.
Well, fair to say that because you learned that from Mr. Baldwin, it impacted the way that you evaluated the evidence in this case.
I object to the form of question. Can we approach?
You spoke to Mr. Baldwin at the scene, correct?
Briefly, yes.
Okay. And he informed you that he just manipulated the hammer, and that impacted your future testing, correct?
I don't recall what he exactly stated on the scene.
Okay. Well, let me just approach you for a moment.
While they're
looking up, why don't we approach? Yep. Page three, lines not. I'm showing the witness. This, as you can see from up here, this is a lapel camera from 1021, a lapel recording. See this answer here?
Yes, I see it.
And so, does that refresh your recollection that Mr. Baldwin told you that he cocked the gun?
I don't recall that conversation.
But you don't dispute that it happened?
No, I don't dispute it. I just don't recall.
But when you made the request...
Objection, let's approach.
Just to go back to the spent shell casing for a moment, was the spent shell casing collected from inside of the church or on the cart?
On the cart.
And another question is, do you know if Mr. Baldwin's fingerprints or DNA were on the trigger of the firearm?
I do not know those results off the top of my head.
Is there a better witness that may come in to tell the jury that?
Yes.
Okay. And, you know, you were interacting, as we were left off, with Mr. Baldwin at the scene and spoke to him, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And after speaking to him, did you, in fact, test the hammer? Did you in fact request to test the hammer of the firearm for prints and DNA?
Same objection. That doesn't lay the foundation. It has to go to why she did what she did.
It's the first question, and then I'll ask why she did it.
Overruled.
Did you, after speaking to Mr. Baldwin, did you then test the hammer of the gun for DNA or fingerprints, or request that it be done?
The request that was made was after a conversation with the lab, which essentially was asking them what assistance they could provide. I believe the request was made for latents and DNA. I don't recall the specifics of what on the item they were going to specifically test. I don't know their requirements or standards when they receive a firearm. Most labs would do the testing on the entirety of the gun, but they might break it down further and do just the trigger, just the hammer, just the rough areas. I'm not certain. That's a question for their lab.
Right, but I'm just asking you, Investigator Papa, when you made the request, did you specify, you know, given what we've learned now, we really want you to check the hammer specifically? Did you make that request?
I don't recall specifically requesting that.
And when you got to the prop cart, you could not tell from looking at it whether or not anybody had altered or moved any of the evidence, correct?
Correct.
And if somebody did, that would be a pretty serious problem in a case like this.
It would be a problem in any case, yeah.
Did you ever interview or review any interviews of Sarah Zachary?
No.
But one thing that you did know at this time, for certain, is that you were looking for Starline Brass silver 45 ammunition, correct?
At that time, no, we did not know that that's what we were looking for.
When did you learn that?
That was learned later on, once realizing that all of our suspected live rounds were Starline Brass with a silver primer.
So all of the live rounds at the movie were Starline Brass, nickel primer, live, right?
Yeah.
And this idea came up early in the investigation that what if somebody sabotaged the set and put those live rounds there? Do you recall that?
Yes.
And that was quickly dismissed in this case as not something that law enforcement thought to be realistic. Fair?
Yes.
But you also needed to investigate whether somebody from outside of the rust set was responsible for injecting these live ammunition into the rust set. Fair?
Yeah.
And so you continue to investigate that as this case proceeds and you executed search warrants, correct?
Not myself personally investigating it, but I believe that was something that was being investigated.
So, you know, we looked at, and I'm just going to show you Defense A1. And what's this a picture of?
These were some of the rounds that were located loose on top of the cart.
And these live rounds being loose on top of the cart, I mean, you don't know whether those live rounds were there at the time of the incident, right?
Correct.
And again, these were all Starline Brass Nickel Primer Live, correct?
Yes.
And you were also not certain at times when you would collect rounds, whether or not they were live or dummies.
Correct.
Some rounds you submitted to the FBI to process to figure that out.
Yes.
And if we could look at State's Exhibit 27, can you tell me what that is?
This is a photograph of the silver primers on the two rounds that were later discovered to be live that were on the top of the cart.
And so in this box you then collect, A2, right? What was your understanding of this box?
My understanding was this was the box handed to Lieutenant Benavidez that was being pulled from at the time to load the firearm. I was then placed in his unit and later collected by myself.
And when you looked inside of that box, State's Exhibit 17, did you find?
These were the rounds inside of the box.
And can you tell the jury the significance of that round?
Yes, this round with the silver primer was a live round.
But you don't know whether somebody was rifling through this box and just missed it.
No.
And you also showed the jury that these Starline Brass Nickel Live Rounds were found in other places on the set, right? This is State's Exhibit 16?
Yes.
And what is this?
This is a close-up of one of the gun holsters that has a live round in it.
Okay. And State's Exhibit 15?
This is a close-up of the gun holster that was belonging to Mr. Baldwin that has a live round.
And was then 15, this is 15. Was 16 the one that was the other actor, Jason Eccles?
Yes.
Okay. And so Mr. Eccles, another actor on the set, turns out that he, as he acted, as he performed, had a live bullet in his bandolier, correct?
Yes.
And you have no reason to think Mr. Eccles had any idea that was there. Right?
Correct.
Your working theory, as you evaluated the ammunition and looked at the similarity between the Starline Nickel Live and the Starline Nickel Dummies, is that they could have been easily commingled. Fair?
Yes.
In other words, somebody could have mistaken one for the other, right?
Yes.
And so when you conduct then a search warrant on the church, you find additional evidence, right?
Yes.
And you talked about search warrants in your direct examination, but I just want to orient the jury a little bit to what that is. A search warrant is where you go to a court and you swear out a warrant, and the warrant tells you what you can search for inside of a dwelling or a location, right?
Yep.
And you tell the court what information you have and what you'd like to look for. Fair enough?
Yeah.
And unlike somebody sort of, you know, walking into the precinct and voluntarily giving you evidence, one of the things about a search warrant is you don't have to tell the person you're coming before you go, right?
Yep.
So, as you're going into execute the search warrant on the church, and the warrants in this case, you did discuss that with Corporal Hancock, correct?
Yes, I believe we had some brief conversations about the search warrant.
And the warrant for the church, it didn't indicate there was any specific crime you were looking for. Is that fair?
I don't recall.
And so when you went inside of the church, you were looking for evidence, right?
Yes.
And you remember, as you ended your direct examination yesterday, Ms. Morrissey, the prosecutor, said, you know, you keep all of this evidence so that if anybody wants to bring any evidence, you have it, right?
Yes.
Okay. And one of the things you found in the church was the shot list for the dead, right?
I don't recall that.
Do you recall collecting paperwork inside the church?
Yes.
Okay. And...
Your Honor, I've already indicated to Mr. Spiro that I object to some of these, so we can approach now. I wish we had dealt with it previously.
No, I think I can just lay it and introduce.
She said she objects. Please don't talk among yourselves or anyone else about the evidence here in court.
I don't have. Maybe seated.
Good morning again. So I'm just going to, we left off, so I'm now moving for admission for the foundation. As you stated on direct, put up States 21. I can publish that. It's an evidence. As you testified yesterday, you collected items from the church that you thought were relevant to this case, correct?
Yes.
And some of the things that you thought gave insight into what happened, correct?
Yes.
And including in those was a copy of the script and the shot list, correct?
I believe there was paperwork that was photographed, but I don't believe it was collected.
Okay. Well, I'm going to pass up to the witness what it's marked in A11. Recognize these?
Yes.
And what are those?
It appears to be scene paperwork.
That you collected?
Yes.
And those are fair and accurate photographs?
Yes.
I don't believe that's an adequate foundation.
What more do you want him to do?
But what we discussed at the bench. But I mean, obviously, I defer to the court, but I'm relying on the conversation we had.
Well, all right. So they are conditionally admitted pursuant to the discussion up at the bench.
So I'm going to now publish A3. And can you read that last sentence?
Russ Colt cocked quietly now.
And I'm now going to publish A11. See if this will read that, or does it not focus right?
I cannot read that.
Okay, I apologize. I'm going to pass it up to the not. Oh, it goes to autofocus, so this is not my fault. Just permission to approach.
Macro on hammer as thumb cocks it. Line 6 is frontal slow push in on rust, his hat down, motionless.
Thank you. And you found and photographed these docs in the church in the vicinity of where Ms. Hutchins fell, correct?
I believe the first photograph, the first paper was. I don't recall where the second paper located.
And if we look at states 21, I'll have that up on the screen just for a moment. When you collected these documents, you thought they were important, correct?
When I photographed them, yes.
Sorry, I apologize. When you photographed them. And the reason you thought it was important is because you thought it reflected what would have happened in the scene, correct?
I understood that there was a mentioning of a firearm in this, in the paperwork, which is why I thought it was important.
Right, because it's actually just because you thought to yourself at the time and that it actually described what he's doing, right?
I believe at the time, yes.
And you said to your fellow officers that you think it's important because it confirms Mr. Baldwin's statement, correct?
I don't recall stating that, but it could be something that I've stated.
And you indicated that you thought it was hers, meaning Ms. Hutchins' paperwork, correct?
I believe that one of those papers does have her name on it, which is why I thought it was hers.
Right. And the other paper that you already testified to, A3, was found around where she fell, correct? And it contains the shot list and the script for that day, correct?
I don't know exactly.
So you have laid the foundation?
Did you believe at the time that what you were looking at may have reflected things that were supposed to occur in the church?
Yes.
You also recovered Ms. Hutchins' cell phone, correct?
At a later date.
And that was sent to Byron French in the investigation division to extract the cell phone?
I believe so, yes.
Now, you tried to find video recording in the church, correct?
Yes.
But the video cameras for the scene in question did not record that day, so you were not able to find that. Fair?
They recorded a portion of that day. There was a recording that was recovered.
And you didn't find any live ammunition?
Yes, there was one live round located inside the church.
There was, okay. And where was that found?
That was in Mr. Baldwin's holster.
Right, so, the bandolier that we were talking about before.
Yep.
Okay. And you have no reason to think that Mr. Baldwin had any idea that was there, right?
Correct.
At that scene, and at this time in the investigation, Detective Connor was in charge, correct?
Yes, I believe.
So while you're now then leaving the church, and we're going to move on, you have to figure out how ammunition works on a movie set, right?
Yes.
That wasn't something that you were familiar with before the incident in question, right?
Correct.
And you sort of became the subject matter expert on that topic.
Yes, I say so.
Right, I mean, you were called
for the sheriff's office.
For the sheriff's office, right? But also you'd be called into meetings with Corporal Hancock and the prosecutors and try to educate them on those topics. Isn't that fair?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, you weren't running the case, were you?
No.
But you were there to assist not only with the evidence, but to be a specialist on this sort of unique topic. Fair?
Yes.
And again, you said this on direct, but I think it got a little confusing, perhaps. But there are never supposed to be live ammunition on a movie set.
Okay, go ahead. Yours is on, though, right? Okay.
You understood that there should never be live ammunition on a movie set, right?
Yes.
And the one type of ammunition that occurs on movie sets is blanks, and those are the ones that just go poof, right?
Correct.
Okay, and I'm just showing 12 that's in evidence, right? And those have a crimp, like a crimped top, right?
Yes.
Okay. As opposed to dummy rounds, right? I'm showing you 811 that's in evidence, right? Which look like real bullets, right?
Correct.
And there were different types of dummy rounds, as I think you said on direct. But you can't tell necessarily that a dummy round is a dummy round just by looking at it.
Not always, no.
Some dummy rounds have holes in them, right?
Yes.
Others have their primers removed.
Yes.
Some of them do not have holes in the side or their primers removed.
Correct.
Some of them don't make a noise when they're shaken, called Den-X round.
Yes.
And some dummy rounds look exactly like live rounds, correct?
Yes.
And those look exactly like live ammunition. Fair?
Yes.
And those type of exact replica dummy rounds were on the set of Rust, right?
Yes.
And those were Seth Kenny's, right?
Yes.
And in terms of identifying dummy rounds by shaking them, right, which is something you talked about on direct, some of them are louder than others, right?
Yes.
Some of them have one BB or two BBs in them or three BBs in them, right?
Yes.
Sometimes if you shake a bullet, you can hear the powder, or because of oxidation, you can hear things inside of a bullet when you shake it, right?
Yes.
And depending on the setting of something would impact the person's ability to hear it. Isn't that fair?
Yes.
So, right, if I shook a dummy round right now in a courtroom in front of a microphone, right, it would probably be, you would be able to hear it. Would you agree?
Yes.
But if people are all moving around in a movie, you don't know that everybody would be able to hear it. Isn't that fair?
Not everyone, no.
And some dummy rounds don't shake at all. Isn't that also true?
Yes.
The only way to determine definitively is to send them to the FBI and to take apart the dummy round to figure out what the powder is inside of it, right?
The powder inside of a dummy round?
Yeah, I'm moving
the ball bearings.
Well, the ball bearings versus the powder that could be in a live ammunition,
yes,
right?
That would be the comparison, yes.
And so one of the questions that I'm going to ask you is there different grades of gunpowder used in blanks versus live rounds?
I do not know the answer to that question.
And so as you proceed in this case, you are then executing the prop truck search at the scene of Rust, right?
Yes.
So about a week after the incident, you go back to the setting of Rust and you execute a search warrant on the truck that housed the prop cart that you found the shell casing on, right?
Yes.
And when you went to do that search warrant, it was light outside, right?
Correct.
And you were with your fellow officers, Hancock, Kano, Sergeant Zook was there, correct?
Yes.
And you had a good working relationship with all, right? And Detective Hancock and Kano, you know, signed off on what you collected. Detectives involved in this, right?
Yes.
And Sergeant Zook was their supervisor, signed off as well. Fair?
Yes.
And there was a witness there that day that assisted law enforcement with the search of the prop truck, right?
Yes.
A man named Seth Kent.
Correct.
And not only did he assist, he actually was the one that opened the safe. Right?
Yes, he had the combination to it.
Well, do you know how he got the combination?
He was the owner of
about that?
That was my understanding.
You collected dozens of guns from the safe, right?
Yes.
And you understood that there were a dozen plus actors, extras, stuntmen that used firearms on the set of Rust.
Yes.
Just like we talked about with Mr. Ackles and his bandolier, right? A lot of these actors may have at one point or another, unbeknownst to them, God forbid, had live ammunition on them, right?
Yes.
And the prop truck, we can look at A13, was a little disorganized. I don't know if it's quite at the level of the car, but it was a little disorganized, right? Okay, and we'll just show A14 for completeness. And inside the prop truck, there were boxes, right?
Yes.
Boxes of ammunition.
Correct.
And these boxes are sort of, a lot of them are the same shape, make, model, white box, right?
Yes.
And I'm just going to show you 816, which is a close-up. And do you notice one box that looks a little different than the other box?
Yes, there is.
And which box is that?
The box in the center, instead of it being stamped, it has handwritten in blue marker, dummy rounds, 45 LC.
Right, and I'll just blow up that, which is in State's Exhibit 19, right? And you don't know who wrote that writing on it, do you?
Seth Kenny.
And if we could look at A22, you tell us what that is.
Out of context, no, I can't.
Okay, well then we're going to look at A23.
Can you move it up? Thank you. This is the rounds that were inside of that box with the styrofoam insert that were.
And you see that they are Starline brass nickel dummy rounds, right?
Yes.
And again, the difference between a Starline brass nickel-plated dummy round and a live round is effectively that one has powder inside.
Okay. Yes.
And do you know where all the ones in this box went? The ones that are missing?
I do not.
So we're in the prop truck, and you have Starline brass, you have nickel primer, but they're not live, right?
Correct.
And you don't know when that box ended up getting to the prop truck, moved to the prop truck. You don't know any of that background, right? You don't know if somebody placed that box with handwriting on it into that Mary Kay bag.
No.
And on the prop truck that housed all the ammunition, was there any live ammunition on the prop truck?
No.
I want to ask you something, Investigator Popple. Did that surprise you?
No, not necessarily.
Well, you've got all this, you know, you're finding these live rounds all over the set, right?
Yeah.
Sort of seemed to be a little bit of everywhere without much cohesion between where you're finding them, right?
Yes.
And they're housed originally in the prop truck, right?
Yes.
And so you go a week later to the prop truck, which has all the ammunition, right?
Yes.
And there's not a single live round. Right?
Correct.
Why did law enforcement wait to go to the prop truck?
Search warrant needed to be written. I'm not sure of why the time difference occurred exactly.
Well, I mean, the search warrant for the church that we talked about on the 21st, you guys were able to do in one day, right? The same day that the incident happened, you did the search warrant on the church, right?
We did it the next day.
Well, you got the warrant on the 21st, you did it the 22nd. Is
correct.
That fair?
Yes.
So if you could do a search warrant in one day for one thing, why does it take a 7 search warrant?
I do not know the circumstances of why there was that time frame.
And so on direct examination, you pointed out that, and this is state's third, you said that these were the Seth Kenny dummies in the box, right?
Yes.
And you talked about that a bit on direct examination, right? And I think you were making a point that Seth Kenny's dummies like look a little bit different than the live ammunition found on set. So perhaps there was a way to distinguish them. Was that the import of your testimony?
Yeah.
But if you look at the picture of the Seth Kenny box as it's being opened, right? How many rounds are in there?
So there are 17.
So then how do you explain why there's more rounds in your picture of those dummies out of the box?
If I can refer to my report to refresh my memory.
It's fine with me. Were you able to refresh your recollection?
Yes.
What's, do you have an echo?
Yes. So I apologize. The photo that was just up of the 22 rounds were actually removed from a bandolier that was located inside of the prop truck.
Defense A26, right? And it has the exact number as the picture you showed the jury, right?
Yes.
Okay. And in fact, the real picture of the ammunition that comes out of Seth Kenny's box is this one, A27, right?
Yeah.
And I saw you counting.
I just wanted to make sure the number of rounds.
Fair enough. No. I think that's a good way that's how I figured it out. That's the right one though, right?
Yes.
And there's something important about this picture, isn't there?
Yes.
Doesn't that Seth Kenny round look exactly like the
under a camera flash, I suppose it could.
Well, I don't know about suppose it could. I mean, you know, we'll look at the showcase. Exhibit 28. We'll go back. A27. And go back. Dates 28. Don't you think they look an awful lot alike?
They look similar, yes, but I can still see differences.
Well, I mean, you're a trained investigator, right?
I'm trained crime scene tech, yes.
Even more than an investigator or crime scene tech, right?
Correct.
You have your Nikon 700 flash in your camera, right?
Yes.
You have the opportunity to take this ammunition back to the precinct, lay it out, and photograph it, right?
Yes.
You have no reason to think anybody on the set of Rust was able to do that, do you?
No.
You turned in your report in this investigation. Hancock signed off on it, correct?
My supervisor signed off on my report.
Sergeant Zook?
At the time, yes.
So we're still on the topic of the ammunition, and you and law enforcement were trying to figure out the source of the live ammunition, correct?
Yes.
In fact, it was incumbent upon you to try to find the source, because if there were people sending live ammunition to movie sets, that would be very dangerous condition, wouldn't
it? Yes.
And as you were going about your search, Seth Kenny actually walked into the precinct one day and gave you ammunition, right?
Yes.
Okay. You remember that, right?
I do.
That was. Did you think Mr. Kenny was being helpful?
I believe so, yeah.
I mean, were you suspicious at all of that?
That was not my place to be suspicious of him. I hadn't had much interaction with him.
Yeah, I mean, it may not have been your place to, but I'm just asking you if after this point, you know, Seth Kenny, you know, comes knocking on the precinct and shows you all some rounds, whether or not that
asked and answered.
I don't believe it was.
Overruled.
I'm just asking whether it's your place to be or not. I'm just asking, when the man showed up and just presented ammunition to the precinct, did that make you suspicious at all?
No.
Well, let me ask you this. I bet it didn't surprise you that he didn't turn in the exact matching lethal ammunition, did it?
No, I wasn't surprised by that.
Okay. And so what he turned in, and now you have your report there if you need to refresh, but he walks into the precinct and he gives you two different types of shell casings or ammunition, right? He gives you Starline brass. he gives you spent shell casings, right?
Yes.
And those were Starline brass nickel primer, but they weren't live, right? They had been shot or they were spent shell casings, right?
If I can refer to my report to refresh, I don't recall if any of them were Starline brass.
If you turn to the last page.
Is there a specific item number that you're referring to?
Item set, I think 215. You're going to be better at determining these reports than me.
Yes.
Okay. And he brought you, again, he also gave you live ammunition with nickel primers, but they weren't Starline brass, right?
Yes.
Okay. So he just seems to have just missed sort of on what you were looking, right?
Yes.
Because you were...
Objection to the form of question. She doesn't know what Seth Kinney's motives are.
Yeah, I don't. He's overruled.
I mean, you know that if Seth Kenny provided the live ammunition to the set, that's worse for Seth Kenny, right?
It's worse for whoever provided it, yes.
I agree. So, but as members of law enforcement, you all know that the person who provided that would have a motive to not be found, true?
Yes.
So you headed to execute a search warrant at Seth Kenny's prop house, right?
Yes.
And a judge signed off on that, sir, right?
Yes.
Because you had probable cause to believe that there was live ammunition that matched the ammunition that killed Miss Hutchins, right?
Yes.
And this was you and, again, Detective Hancock and Sergeant Zook, right?
Yes.
And I wanted to ask you, how come you executed the search warrant at night?
I don't recall.
And I wanted to ask you, how come Detective Kano waits outside?
I don't believe that Detective Kano was there the entirety of the search warrant.
So, well, do you have any information as to why he didn't come inside?
I do not.
Before you went on the search, you discussed it with Detective Hancock, correct?
Yes.
And just like the truck we talked about, you all had done nothing to secure this prop house before you got the search warrant, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And tell the jury, how long did you wait to execute the search warrant at the prop house?
I don't recall.
Well, on direct examination, you knew the dates right away. Don't you remember? You nailed it. 1027, November 30th. Right?
I apologize. I thought you were asking from when it was written to when it was executed.
Oh, no. I apologize. Yes.
We executed the search warrant on November 30th.
Okay. So that was a month and a week, at least, right, after the incident in question.
Yes.
And just like the truck, you're executing the search warrant, and who was there to help you?
Seth Kinney.
And your purpose was to find the matching ammunition, correct?
Our purpose was to locate any 45 caliber live ammunition.
Well, sure, but the ultimate investigation that you all were conducting was to try to solve the question of how the lethal round got on a movie set, right?
Yes.
And you talked a little bit about this, talked about the prop car, how the disorganization of it could lead to commingling, right?
Yes.
How was the organization of the prop house?
Some things were organized and some were not.
Well, if you could give us a sense, did you find it to be more organized than the car or less organized?
I would say they were probably about equal.
And you knew, did you not, that a dummy round can be turned into a live round, and a live round can be turned into a dummy round, correct?
Yes.
So a person with spent shell casings or dummies, they could reuse them, correct?
Yes.
That would be economically efficient.
Yes.
And you knew, as you enter this search, that some of the ammunition on the set of Rust definitely came from Seth Kinney, right?
Yes.
He admitted that, right?
Correct.
There were invoices. He didn't have much of a choice, correct?
Yes.
And you were also looking for tools that could be used to manufacture dummies and live ammunition, correct? And you were also looking for a green ammo can, correct?
Yes.
You know, the white boxes that we keep looking at are... they look like each other, right?
Correct.
A green ammo can is a more unique item, fair?
Yes.
So why don't you tell the jury why you were looking for a green ammo can?
I don't recall specifically, other than at some point in time it had housed live rounds.
And law enforcement had that information at the time of going to a judge to get the search warrant, and very much at the time that they were executing the warrant, right?
Yes.
And I don't want to belabor the white box conversation too much, but... other than find it too, on the white boxes that you found at the set, and at the white boxes that you saw a lot of at Seth Kinney, there were these initials in the middle of the white box that said JS, right? I'll just show you A2, right, that you found at the scene, correct?
Yes.
And if we look inside of Seth Kinney's prop house A18, you see very similar font, correct?
Yes.
And as you continue on in your search, you understood Seth Kinney was a person, right?
Yes.
And this was an important moment in the case, correct?
Yes.
And you even found out that the day before Seth Kinney provided the dummies to Rust, he had in his possession live Darline brass nickel primer from 1883, correct?
I don't recall it being the day before or having that information personally.
Well, so let's leave the day before right now. You knew and understood that Seth Kinney had recently been in possession of Starline Brass Nickel Primer Live, correct?
I don't know that it was that specific, just that he was in possession of live ammunition at a recent point.
Now, when you testified on direct examination, you told the jury about how you found some live ammo at the prop house, right?
Yes.
And how you took that live ammo and sent it to the FBI, right?
Yes.
And you sent the live ammo from the set of Rust to the FBI, right?
Yes.
And you're not an FBI agent, but what you told the jury was that when you compared the powder from the set of Rust's ammunition to Seth Kinney's live ammunition, they didn't look the same.
Correct.
And you testified previously. well, let me just ask you. Did you take all of the 45 live ammunition into evidence?
Yes.
And did you search every single box inside of Seth Kinney's prop house?
Yes.
And because you did that according, it just goes to sleep, talking too much. And because you've told this jury now that you found every 45 live ammo there, correct?
Yes.
And that you searched every single box, correct?
Yes.
What you're telling this jury is they can be sure that if there was a live round on there that matched the set of Rust, you would have found it, right?
Yes.
Let's take a look at A19. Is that one of the rooms inside of the prop house?
Yes.
You see those boxes packed all the way to the ceiling?
Yes.
Did you all have a ladder or anything when you guys were searching?
No.
Okay. So can we agree that you didn't search the boxes at the top?
I believe they were taken down or at least looked into. It was not just myself searching.
Right, well, we talked about it. It was, Kana was outside. It was you and Hancock and Zook, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, tell the jury. I mean, did you or did you not search every single one of those boxes?
We searched the entirety of the property, yes.
Well, what do you mean when you say that you searched the entire?
I mean, if a box is opened and it is clear that there's no ammunition in it, meaning if I open a box and it's all clothing and I look at the bottom of the box and it's all clothing, then we're not going to dump the box out on the floor and continue to shake it until rounds that aren't in there fall out.
But okay, sure. Were there any boxes like that?
There were a multitude of boxes.
Got it. So are you telling this jury that you're on your oath that you searched every single box?
Not me personally. Our team reasonably searched the warehouse.
Okay. And I think we're getting closer to, when you say reasonably, what do you mean by that?
I mean, how would you approach searching this kind of area?
Well, I can tell you that law enforcement, I know from the move, I'll move on. Well, why don't you tell me, what's a grid search?
A grid search is usually conducted outside where you would reasonably set up in a way that you could grid an area and then search each section on that grid.
Okay, and well, why don't you tell me what would have been, if you wanted to be the best way to search this room if you had unlimited resources in time?
I believe that when we searched this room, we divided the room in order for it to be searched.
Divided it how?
Meaning myself took one section, Sergeant Zook took another section, Detective Hancock took another section.
Are you certain of that, or are you best estimate that that's what your memory tells you?
I do not recall exactly how the room was searched.
Okay, and then let's say you open up a box with ammunition. How would you search an individual box?
It would depend on the box.
So tell me.
If we open a box and it's all 38s, we're not looking for 38s. At that time, we're looking for 45s.
Okay. And so if you opened the box and it was commingled rounds, how?
We would have to go through those rounds individually.
Right. And there were boxes like that here, right?
There were a few, yeah.
And how many rooms were there inside of this location that had lots of boxes?
There was the back room that we see here. There was a front room that didn't have many boxes, and then a side room that had nicely organized boxes.
And what about the bathroom? Weren't there boxes and ammunition in the bathroom?
There were boxes in the bathroom, yes.
So four rooms, right?
Yep.
Three of you, four rooms, right? A20. What are we looking at here, Mr. Papa?
This was a table that was located in the side room.
Okay. And what do you notice? I don't know why that arrow's there. What do you notice on this? It's probably because of me. What do you notice on this table of, what's on this table? What is?
There were plastic bags, tools, cleaning products, tape.
Okay, and as we talked about before, the search warrant told you to look.
Yep.
Okay. And Detective Hancock spent some time in this room during the search, correct?
Yes, I believe so.
And do you know what all these tools are? Do you have familiarity?
I'm not.
Okay. You don't know what they can be done. You don't know how they can be used with either firearms or ammunition. Okay, so tell the members of the jury which of these tools you seized.
We did not take any tools from the warehouse.
When you were searching this area, did you have a schematic or a floor plan?
No, I don't believe so.
Did you go one room at a time or did you split up?
I don't recall.
Was there a predetermined plan of how to search this and to confirm that there were no further live bullets?
The predetermined plan was that I went in myself first and did overall photographs of everything in place, and then we conducted the search.
Did you do those letters like we saw in the prop truck so you could keep track of everything? Remember when we were looking in the church that there were those letters up so that you could sort of keep track and make sure you got everything? Did you use those letters?
No, I did not.
And of course, Seth Kenny was there and being helpful again, right?
Yep.
He told you that there were no 45 long Colts there and offered to show you the dummy rounds at one point. Do you remember that?
I don't recall that.
Do you remember him saying, I bet you $1,000 there's no 45 long Colts in there?
I do recall that, yes.
Okay. And did he win the bet?
He did not.
Lost the bet. So he tells you that, and law enforcement continues, and you look in the bathroom, and you found them, right?
Yes.
Let me ask you something. At any point, did you become suspicious of Seth Kenny?
No.
A21. You were able to find this container that says live ammo on it, right?
Yes.
And that was helpful to whoever wrote that to show you where the live ammo was, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's one of the reasons you looked in that bin. Somebody labeled it live, right?
Well, we were looking in all of those bins, yes.
Every single...
I believe there was camera equipment stacked on top of it.
Right.
And when they're opened and you see that it's camera equipment, close it back up and went to the box on the bottom that stated there was live ammo in it.
Doesn't this handwriting and label look kind of like that dummy round label we saw on the box that had that round you and I looked at? State 19?
Yes, it is similar, yes.
And that box that had the live rounds in it, there were a couple things that you found. Right. At PDQ, you found, and that's the prop house. That's the name of the prop house, right?
Yes.
Okay. You found, bless you, Starline Brass Live. No nickel. And you found Starline, you found Nickel Primer Lives. No Starline Brass, right?
Correct.
Every time you were with Seth Kenny, you got close to finding something that matched the scene, Starline Brass, Nickel Primer Live, but it was always one-off, wasn't it?
Yes.
And as you continued on your search, you found the green ammo can, right?
Yes.
And again, it was helpfully labeled, right?
Yes, I believe it was behind that box. You weren't able to obviously see it.
I see. But it also had a helpful label on it, didn't it?
Yes.
It said empty, right?
Yes.
And it looks a lot like the handwriting in States 19 and the helpful handwriting at A21. It says a lot. Right?
Yes.
And it was taking a long time to go through those boxes.
Yes.
And Detective Hancock was wearing her lapel camera, right?
I believe so, yes.
Have you reviewed that camera?
I have not.
You remember you and Detective, you said to Detective Hancock, you know, this is taking a long time. We really need a spot.
What's relevant?
What's the relevance?
Does it have any more tendency to...
Sure.
I'm going to sustain the objection.
Okay. Did you and Detective Hancock start joking around and long to search every box?
I don't recall that.
Do you deny it?
No.
And there were times in this search where you pick up a box and you just shake the whole box, right?
I don't recall that.
Can we play that video?
There's more to come in the Rust shooting trial against Alec Baldwin from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Press subscribe now.
Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anababe, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anababe sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly, perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Granger for professional grade products and next day delivery. So you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger. For the ones who get it done.
There's nothing like sinking into luxury. At washablesofas.com, you'll find the Anababe sofa, which combines ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. And get this, it's the only sofa that's fully machine washable from top to bottom, starting at only $699. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anababe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill, pets shed, and accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anabay, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anabay sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. There's nothing like sinking into luxury. At washablesofas.com, you'll find the Anabay sofa, which combines ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. And get this, it's the only sofa that's fully machine washable from top to bottom, starting at only $699. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabay has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. Tired of spills and stains on your sofa? WashableSofas.com has your back. Featuring the Anabay Collection, the only designer sofa that's machine washable inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly prices. That's right, sofas start at just $699. Enjoy a no-risk experience with pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and changeable slipcovers made with performance fabrics. Experience cloud-like comfort with high-resilience foam that's hypoallergenic and never needs fluffing. The sturdy steel frame ensures longevity, and the modular pieces can be rearranged anytime. Check out washablesofas.com and get up to 60% off your Anabay sofa, backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not absolutely in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping or restocking fees. Every penny back. Upgrade now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out, so you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, they're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life.
Plus changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.